ready to lead the world, not retreat from it. Once again, sit at the head of the table.
U.S. foreign policy looks like it will change when the U.S. president-elect takes office. This is Wednesday, the 9th of December, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, when he does take office, Joe Biden's inauguration will be something very different. More arrests in Hong Kong, and Keenan and Shakespeare make history in the U.K. That and more on today's VOA Asia. After 4 years of President Trump's America First policy, President-elect Joe Biden says his administration will reassert the nation's historic role as a global leader. VOA correspondent Margaret Bashir reports that expectations at the United Nations are high that the United States will re-engage at the world body.
When he introduced his top national security and foreign policy officials last month, President-elect Joe Biden said they reflect that America is back.
Ready to lead the world, not retreat from it. Once again, sit at the head of the table. Ready to confront our adversaries and not reject our allies. Ready to stand up for our values.
At the United Nations, the Trump administration has slashed hundreds of millions of dollars in funding to programs, including peacekeeping missions, Palestinian refugees, and for women's reproductive health. It pulled out of UN agencies like the World Health Organization and quit a major accord on climate action. Biden could win some international goodwill by quickly undoing some of Trump's policies. Experts say UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres will likely have more latitude with the new U.S. administration.
I think we're going to see Guterres laying out some pretty ambitious plans in the year ahead on how to fight climate change and how to fight inequality, because in a sense, he's liberated to promote ambitious ideas for international cooperation after a period in which he had to be enormously cautious to avoid offending Trump.
Biden's nominee to be UN ambassador and member of his cabinet is career diplomat Linda Thomas Greenfield.
America is back. Multilateralism is back. Diplomacy is back.
Diplomats have publicly and privately welcomed her nomination.
We think that she'll bring to bear her vast experience, over three decades of diplomacy. And that's what we need it now. Now we need a diplomatic skills maturity and knowing that we have a common cause, all of us.
Whether to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal will quickly test the new administration.
The president-elect recognizes that this is going to be a tough road ahead. If Iran were to enter into strict compliance with the 2015 deal, then the U.S. will rejoin the deal, but only as the beginning of follow-on negotiations. And that's where the difficulties are going to come.
At the United Nations, China moved to expand its influence as the Trump administration pulled back.
Biden, I think, will want to limit Chinese influence, but does know that in some ways it's necessary to work with Beijing.
Both allies and adversaries are eager to see how Biden and his UN envoy will translate this new U.S. leadership at the United Nations. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, New York.
We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. China and Nepal agree on the height of Mount Everest. The Philippines receives $29 million of military equipment from the U.S. to boost defenses. Australia introduces a bill to make Facebook and Google pay media groups for content. Indian doctors find lead and nickel in blood samples after hundreds suffer a mystery illness. An asteroid sample arrives in Japan after a six-year space odyssey. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. plans are underway for the inauguration of Joe Biden as the 46th president of the United States. VOA's Steve Reddish looks at the pandemic's impact on the planning.
Construction of a platform on the Capitol steps and a reviewing stand in front of the White House are the familiar clues that America's quadrennial winter festival, a presidential inauguration, is just around the corner.
Thank you, Mr. President-elect. A lot of people are wondering what your inauguration is going to look like, considering...
So am I.
All smiles aside, Biden is not alone in wondering how the coronavirus pandemic will affect the festivities attached to his swearing in.
There is nothing that will inhibit President-elect Joe Biden from taking the oath, from giving a speech, and from having a few dignitaries around him in the out-of-doors space that is the west front of the Capitol.
Laura Brown is the director of the George Washington University Graduate School of Political Management. She says most Americans who watch the inauguration on television will notice the difference once the cameras cut away to the audience.
I think what you are more likely to see are sort of spaced out chairs, perhaps with actual tickets to access the space, and a way in which to make sure that people are safe even though they are out of doors. I imagine, too, that masks will be mandatory.
The United States Constitution mandates what is said when taking the oath of office and when it takes place. Biden admits the usual ruffles and flourishes will be missing from his inauguration.
My guess is there probably will not be a gigantic inaugural parade on down Pennsylvania Avenue. But my guess is you'll see a lot of virtual activity in states all across America, engaging even more people than before.
Laura Brown says crowd size will not be an issue at Biden's inauguration.
We are not going to see the president and the first lady dancing at each one of the major states' balls. We are not going to see, you know, huge numbers of Americans packed on the street waving the parade forward. This is going to be a time of seriousness, substance, austerity, and purpose.
President Donald Trump has yet to concede the election and is reportedly considering holding a competing event to kick off his 2024 presidential campaign. Biden said his inauguration team is being more imaginative because of COVID-19.
First and foremost, and my objective is to keep America safe, but still allow people to celebrate and see one another celebrating.
Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, South Korean officials say they have more than tripled the number of coronavirus vaccine containers that aircraft can carry by easing limits on dry ice needed to keep them cold. Stay up to date with VOA. You are listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. UK patients Margaret Keenan and William Shakespeare became two of the first people in the world to receive the coronavirus vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech, making Britain the first Western country to roll out mass vaccinations to the public. Francis McGuire reports.
British health workers applaud Margaret Keenan after she became the first person in the world to receive the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine outside of clinical trials. The 90-year-old grandmother from Northern Ireland was given the jab in central England on Tuesday. Her treatment means the UK is now the first Western country to roll out mass vaccinations to the public. For Keenan, it was hard to believe she was part of a historic moment.
I thought it was a joke, to tell you the truth, to start with. I couldn't believe it, you know, but I'm happy it's happened, and now I've done it, and hopefully it'll help other people come along and do as I did, you know, try and do the best to get rid of this terrible thing, yes.
Not long after, this British man became probably the world's second most famous person, named William Shakespeare. The 81-year-old became one of the first people to receive the vaccine.
Groundbreaking, I think. It could make a difference to our lives from now on, couldn't it? The start of changing our lives and our lifestyle.
Britain has ordered 40 million doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech shot. About 800,000 doses are expected to be available within the first week. Care home residents and carers, the over 80s and some health service workers are top priority to get them.
That was Francis McGuire reporting. Wuhan shoppers are crowding markets and people are dancing in the streets as memories of COVID-19 fade almost a year on since the first cases were detected there. Flora Bradley Watson has more.
It's been almost a year since the first cases of COVID-19 were detected in central China, in the city of Wuhan, before there was an outbreak here and later the world's pandemic. China first alerted the World Health Organization to 27 cases of viral pneumonia in Wuhan on December the 31st. Since then, more than 67 million people have been infected with the virus, and some 1.54 million people have died. But aside from face masks, few hints remain of Wuhan's early role in the pandemic, even while many countries still struggle to contain the virus. In a wet market 15 minutes drive from the epicenter of the Wuhan outbreak, shops hum with daily life. Sellers catch and gut fish, while visitors buy vegetables, live frogs and turtles. Vendor Nia Ginson shrugs off fear of the virus.
I'm not afraid. What is there to be afraid of? The whole world is like this now.
Some say it didn't originate in Wuhan at all.
It's definitely not China where the virus originated. You wouldn't find it in central China. It must have been brought over by someone else, don't you think?
Wuhan was initially hard hit by the coronavirus, recording over 50,000 cases and nearly 4,000 deaths in the early months of 2020. Residents still remember the pressure of the 76-day lockdown they endured, when the city's empty streets were bisected by kilometres of thick yellow barricades that cut off businesses and kept people at home. But those memories are becoming more distant. As the city returns to a daily rhythm, Wuhan has not recorded a new locally transmitted case in several months, and China's relative success in controlling the virus has become a key talking point in Chinese state media. Local people like Hu Hang put it down to self-discipline and personal hygiene.
Everyone is quite strict with personal safety measures. People are always wearing masks when outside. I have been out of Wuhan, and I realize that people from outside of Wuhan would never wear masks.
The city's recovery is in sharp contrast to other major economies heading into the holiday season. The United States recorded 15,000 deaths last week, the highest seven-day rate since April, while European countries have rolled out tight restrictions on gatherings ahead of Christmas.
Flora Bradley Watson reporting.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, Washington's top North Korea envoy arrived in South Korea Tuesday for what is expected to be his last visit, with little prospect for restarting talks with Pyongyang before incoming U.S. President Joe Biden takes office next month. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. A Malaysian family has cooked up a tasty solution to its economic woes during the pandemic by opening a backyard pizzeria that has proved a hit in their sleepy village. Based in Jemapo, 75 miles south of the capital of Kuala Lumpur, the business offers pizzas with herbs and spices and cut pineapples with mixed meat or tuna, along with a heavy layer of mozzarella and cheddar cheese. Rolha Hassan, the eldest of several siblings, is the mastermind behind the business.
At the time, we were all sitting at home, so we had to think of a way to get an income. other than relying on the work that was uncertain. We had to do something about it.
Pizzas have been flying out of the family's makeshift kitchen since late April, a month after authorities implemented curbs that confined people to their homes and saw the closure of most businesses. Restaurants were allowed to keep operating, and after Radha's shop selling headscarves saw a fall in business and some of her siblings had their pay cut, the family decided to open the pizzeria. The family has now added a shop to its home and hired about 20 people from the village to make up to 800 wood-fired pizzas daily, 5 days a week. The government said more than 800,000 people have lost their jobs in Malaysia as the virus pushed the country into recession. Made from delicate silk, intricately embroidered with vast flared sleeves, Vietnamese 19th century outfits do not seem a perfect fit for life in that country's hectic modern cities. But Nguyen Duc Lac, a 28-year-old entrepreneur, together with his 11-strong production team in Hanoi, is convinced that attire of their ancestors can make a return to modern-day living.
My ambition is that in any Vietnamese wardrobe, as well as suits, trousers, and dresses, there will be at least one outfit based on an ancient style to wear on important occasions.
The company, which was set up in 2018, has also designed costumes for singers, music, videos, and fashion shows. Despite some criticism that the designs have strayed too far from the originals, they're also seeing a growing interest among young people. Many choose to rent an outfit for a photo shoot, with prices starting at about $17. Although a far more comfortable and modern prospect than royal 19th century clothing, some say they're too restrictive and impractical in today's world. Nevertheless, a simplified version of the woman's áo dài still forms part of some school uniforms in the South and Central regions. It's worn by flight attendants on flag carrier Vietnam Airlines, and it's embraced by many on special occasions. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
To stay healthy, wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Police in Hong Kong arrested 8 more activists Tuesday over an anti-government protest in July, the latest move by authorities in a relentless crackdown on opposition forces in the Chinese-ruled city. Police did not identify the people, saying only that they were aged between 24 and 64. Local media said former pro-democracy lawmaker and veteran activist Lung Kwok Hong, known as Long Hair, was among those arrested.
I mean, it's the continuation of the political harassment and oppression in Hong Kong nowadays, but I think they try to arrest the people who participate in peaceful demonstration.
The move comes a day after 8 people aged between 16 and 34 were arrested, including 3 on suspicion of violating a sweeping national security law over a brief demonstration at a university campus last month. We continue on VOA Asia. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has apologized for failings in the lead-up to the 2019 Christchurch terrorist attacks after a royal commission recommended a raft of legislative changes to prevent another massacre in the future. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In March 2019, Brenton Tarrant, a self-confessed white supremacist from Australia, opened fire at 2 mosques in the New Zealand city of Christchurch, killing 51 worshippers and wounding another 40. A royal commission, the nation's highest form of inquiry, has examined how the mass shootings took place and what led to them. It found New Zealand's intelligence services were almost exclusively focused on the threat from Islamist terrorism, and the police had failed to enforce proper checks on firearm licenses. It concluded that despite these failures, the attacks were unpreventable. Tarrant had moved to New Zealand in 2017 and was granted a gun license about 3 months later. The commission said the attack was driven by an extreme right-wing Islamophobic ideology. Its aim was to promote chaos and disharmony in New Zealand. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says the commission found no failures within any government agencies that would have allowed the gunman's conspiracy to be detected or stopped. Her government has accepted in principle the report's 44 recommendations. They include a new security and intelligence agency, a new counter-terrorism minister, and funding for research into extremism that is specific to New Zealand, a South Pacific country of 5 million people.
A report that's taken this length of time for an event that was as significant as March 15. It is a very comprehensive report, and it does span across a number of areas. They don't just relate, for instance, to our security and intelligence agencies. And so it will take some time for us to be able to implement some of the findings. However, some we will be able to move on quite quickly.
Families of the survivors and victims of the Christchurch mosque shootings believe the report's recommendations don't go far enough. The Islamic Women's Council of New Zealand said in a statement that justice has not been served by the report, which they say was severely restricted by the terms of reference. The Royal Commission gathered information from hundreds of interviews, including the gunmen, government ministers and senior public servants. Many interviews, including with Prime Minister Ardern, will be suppressed for 30 years. Information from Brenton Tarrant has been permanently classified. In August this year, Tarrant was sentenced to life in prison without parole. He admitted to 51 counts of murder, 40 charges of attempted murder, and a terrorism offence. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Forty years ago, former Beatle John Lennon was killed outside of his apartment in New York City. His violent death shook the world. He was 40 years old, yet four decades later, the man and his music still matter to Lennon's own generation, to their children, and to their children's children. In this report, native New Yorker Adam Phillips pays tribute to John Lennon, his music, and the man.
Strawberry Fields is a peaceful spot in Central Park dedicated to John Lennon's memory, a mere 50 or so meters from the Upper West Side apartment building where he lived and died. The usual gaggle of tourists and fans are sitting on benches, some in contemplation, others in song.
What is this place all about, Strawberry Fields?
It means peace, it means music, serenity. It feels like my home.
Is there something about John Lennon that sort of pervades the place?
I feel closer to him when I'm here.
Decades ago, a deranged fan was able to get close enough to the musician to shoot him. The murder shocked the city and the world. Rock and roll photographer Bob Gruen, who knew John Lennon well as a friend, says the pain from that shock can last a lifetime.
You know, he didn't really say things that people didn't know. In fact, what he said was what everybody does know, but he just had a magical way of expressing things.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better.
John Lennon wrote the melancholy song In My Life during the Beatles' earlier days. Its tone is in sharp contrast with the saccharine lyrics that were typical for boy groups at the time. Reporter Larry Kane, the author of Lennon Revealed, got to know the Beatle during the band's American tours.
John Lennon was a man who was very embittered and angry most of his life. He was born to a father who was never around, a mother who disappeared mostly. He had a best friend who died of a brain hemorrhage at the age of 20. But he was also, on the flip side of that, one of the most extraordinary people I'd ever met in terms of his ability to overcome those demons that lurked inside of him.
This is Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.